The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
Start the day the Torah way, Northwest London. Gimel Iyar, Monday the 27th of April, Dayan Yohannes and David Hull from the Federation Beis Din. And the subject of today's shiur is, stuck in London, do I have to pay rent for my dira in Yerushalayim? So let's start with a shaila which is becoming very common in the last couple of days. And that is that we're unfortunately in the middle of a crisis of the coronavirus COVID-19, as a result of which many cities and countries around the world are in lockdown, which means everybody has to stay at home. There's very little international travel. And wherever people are, that's more or less where they're stuck. Now, we're a week after Pesach, beginning of Chodesh Iyar. What has happened is a number of people have found young couples from Chutz La'aretz, from London, for example, who are living in Eretz Yisrael, and they've got contracts for their diras. They're renting apartments in Eretz Yisrael, long term, for 6 months or a year. And they've come home to England to be with their parents or their families in Chutz La'aretz before Pesach, when the coronavirus crisis was building up. At the time, there was still international travel. Now Pesach has passed. Many countries are in lockdown. There are no flights, passenger flights, to Eretz Yisrael from England at the moment. It's Rosh Chodesh Iyar. And the rent is due in that Eretz Yisrael for the apartment they've rented for the next month. But the young couple are stuck in England. So the Baal Dira, the landlord, wants them to pay the rent. And the young couple would rather not pay the rent because they can't use the apartment because they're stuck in London. So many people are asking the Shaila, do they have to pay for rent for the apartment which they have under contract, but which they can't get to because, firstly, there are no flights from England to Eretz Yisrael at the moment, and secondly, even if there were to be flights, the Israeli government is at the moment not allowing non-citizens to enter the country anyway. So they can't use the apartment, so they have to pay for it. So this is a challenge that's been coming up very frequently in the last few days, and we're going to explore the halakhic opinion on this. We're not going to give a definite psak, and the simple reason for that is that we can't paskin a din Torah until we've heard both parties, so we'd have to hear what the tenant says, we'd have to hear what the landlord says, and moreover, every set of circumstances is unique. It could be we need to look at the contract to see if there's any special clauses there, or we'd have to ask the parties if anything was specifically discussed about this. So there are all sorts of variables which could change the psak. But we're going to go through today, in Mitzvah Hashem, the general outline of what the halacha says about this. So to start with, in halacha, the Gemara in a number of places discusses when you have a bilateral contract, a contract, commercial contract, or employment contract between two parties, and one of the parties finds that he's in a situation of oines. Oines means he found himself in an unpreventable situation which stops him from carrying out the terms of the contract. Something happened which is now preventing him from carrying out the terms of the contract. He's onus. He's not able to carry out the contract. So is he financially liable for the losses of the other party? So let's take an easy example. The Gemara says in Asokhe Sa'unin in Bob Metzia, and it's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch as well, in Chesh Mishpat Simin Chin Lama Dalad, right at the beginning in Sif Aleph, someone who hires an employee to water a field. Reuben has a field and he needs it to be watered, and he hires Shimon to do it, and the water source is from a river which passes nearby. So Shimon comes, he's been taken for a day's work, he's halfway through the day and the river dries up. So now it's impossible to get water with which to go and water the field. So there's a matter of onus, a situation of onus The contract cannot be carried out. The field is still there. Reuven says, I'm able to provide my side of the contract. I provided the field. But Shimon can't do anything about bringing water because there is no water to bring. So Shimon, the worker, the employee, the poel, is not able to carry out the contract. Machmas onus. The Gemara says in the Shulchan Aruch Paskins that the employer does not need to pay Shimon for the second half of the day when he's not working. He'll pay him for the first half of the day for the work that he did, but he doesn't have to pay him the second half of the day. And that is because we're not carrying out the work. We're not blaming you. It's not your fault. You're being prevented from carrying out the work. But you didn't do the work, and therefore don't have to pay for it. Says the Shulchan Aruch, that's only if both parties were aware that there was a possibility that the river might dry up. Or conversely, both parties were not aware. It was a complete surprise to both of them. If they're both in the same situation, then the employer need not pay for the work that wasn't done, for the half of the day that wasn't, there was no work. However, if the employer knew that this river sometimes dries up, and the employee was not a local person and he had no idea, then since the employer knew about it and the employee didn't, and the employer didn't tell the employee that you should know it might dry up in the middle of the day, then the employer does have to pay full wages for the second half of the day that the employee didn't work, because he should have told him in advance that you're risking the second half of the day's work. Now, we find, incidentally, in a number of places in the Gemara, when the Gemara talks about an employer paying for an employee even when the employee is actually not working, and the Gemara says that you only actually have to pay kupoil bottle. You don't have to pay the full wages for the period which he's not working, because he's not working. You'd have to pay him what the Gemara calls poil bottle, a worker who's idle, a worker who takes a holiday. So, for example, if half a day's work costs £50, then if you were to ask the average worker, how much would you be prepared to take to not have to work? So the worker might say, for example, well, for £40, I'm prepared to not work. Any less than that is not worth my while. I'd rather work and get £50. So in effect, £40 and not working is the same as giving him £50 for the work that he does. So since the employer has promised him the second half of the day's work, and now it's the employer's fault that the employee can't work, he's got to pay him for his wages. But on the other hand, he doesn't do the work, so then he has to pay him £40 for the poil bottle and not the full £50. So that's what happens if the employee can't carry out the work. On the other hand, what happens if an employee decides that he's not going to work? Not because he's an onus. Well, uniquely by poll, by an employee who gets paid by the time unit, by the hour, by the day, there's a special gezeirus hakosov that he's allowed to retract. Poll yochel lasto b'chatzi hayom. And the reason for that is that if he weren't to be able to retract, he would be considered like an eved, who would be considered like a slave. And the Torah says, avodai heim, which the Gemara Darshan, Hashem says to clarify of my servants, below avodim lavodim, they're not slaves to other people. And therefore, uniquely by a poel, he's allowed to retract in the middle of the job without getting any financial penalty. However, a kablan, a contractor, someone who's not getting paid by the time unit, by the day or by the hour, but is getting paid for the job, is not allowed to retract. There's a whole discussion about what's the difference between a poel and a kablan and what exactly are the parameters that we're not going to go into that today. However, in the situation of dovah ha'ovud, if the job that the employee is being hired to do is something which needs to be done now, and if workers stop in the middle, it'll get ruined, then even a poel can't pull out in the middle of the day. So, for example, in the Mishnah's example, the beginning of Sotah Umnin, you have flax, which has been soaked in a soaking vat, and it needs to be removed, and someone hires a worker to do that, and the worker decides in the middle of the day he's going to stop working, then if he doesn't take the flax out now, the flax will go rotten and get ruined. Or another example, the Mishnah says, you hire somebody to bring musical instruments for a chasna. If the employee backs out in the middle, then there'll be no music at the chasna, and the chasna will get ruined. It's a dovah ovod. It can't wait for another day to try and find another employee. In that case, in the case of a dovah ovod, the worker, no worker, not a poel, not a kablan, no worker is allowed to back out. And if he does, he has to bear a financial penalty. However, says the Gemara, says the Shulchan Aruch, if the, in Shin Lamed Gimel, Sif Hei, if the employee is backing out in the case of a Dovah Avod, not because he wants to voluntarily, because he has to, he's got no choice. For example, he fell ill, he got the coronavirus, he's not able to go to work. Then, if he backs out and he doesn't turn up for work in the Dovah Avod, he doesn't bear any financial liability or any losses to the employer. So again, we see the concept of onus. Just like we find that when the river dries up, the contract is not being carried out by onus, and therefore I don't have to pay him. Mu'adin, if the employee is prevented from coming to work by onus, with a Dovah Avod, he doesn't have to pay any damages caused by the fact that he retracts. And the Shulchan Aruch adds in there, incidentally, that an onus is considered not only if he was ill, but mu'adin if his son was ill or if his wife was ill. That also prevents him from coming to work. We'll come back to that in a few minutes in Mitzvah Hashem. So we see that someone who has to carry out the terms of a contract, and he's prevented from doing so through no fault of his own, he's an onus, he doesn't bear any financial liability for the losses to the other party. Now, let's apply that to a case of a rental contract. Someone rents an apartment or a house for a period of, let's say, a year, and then there's an onus. There is something which prevents him from coming and using the apartment. So if we were to apply the same rules as we've said by employer and employee, what should happen is that the tenant no longer has to pay for the time period that he's not able to use the apartment. Just like we find that a worker who can't go to work doesn't have to pay for the Dovah Avod if he's held back from it. So too, someone who rents an apartment and can't use the apartment, he's prevented from getting there, should be able to pull out and say, I'm not paying from now on. And indeed, there is an opinion of the Mordechai that the Shulchan Aruch, in Kosher Mishpat, Simon Chin Lamed Daled, brings down, which says, the Nen Echonami. There it talks about a classic case of onus on behalf of the Sofer, a case where the Sofer, the tenant, died halfway through the contract. Someone hired rented an apartment for a year, and halfway through the contract, he unfortunately died. So the landlord comes to the Yerushim, to the heirs, and says, you don't have to pay anything from your own money, obviously, but you've inherited an estate, and from this estate, you have to pay for the second half of the year because your father has rented the apartment. To which the heirs turn around and say, he's not using it, he can't use it because he's dead. So that's the end of the contract. He's an onus, and he doesn't have to pay for the second half of the contract. So what's the halacha? As we said, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Mordechai saying that you don't have to pay. And the Chanami, if the socher is an onus and he can't carry out, he can't use the apartment, then he doesn't have to pay for it. However, there is the opinion of the Rashbam. The Rashbam seems to say, not like that. The Rashbam says that when it comes to renting an apartment, the terms of the contract are different. Even if a person is an onus, he can't live in the dira, for example, if he died, nonetheless, he or his heirs will still have to pay for the entire period of the rental. And the reason for that is that we say, Schirus Leyoma Memkerhu, which means when you rent a piece of land or an apartment or a house for a period of time, it's a one-off sale. You bought the apartment for the period of 1 year. And therefore, just like when someone buys a house, and if he dies a week or two later, the heirs can't cancel the sale just because the person is not able to use the house. He's bought it, and that's the end of the contract as far as the two parties are concerned. So to someone who hires, rents an apartment for a period of a month or a year or whatever it should be, that block of time now belongs to him. The apartment belongs to him for that time. And therefore, if something happens in the middle that he can't use it anymore, it's too bad. He's bought the apartment for a year. And therefore, if he dies in the middle, he still has to pay for the entire period of the rental. So the Rashba says that someone who dies, a tenant who dies in the middle of the rental period, has to pay for the entire period. Whereas the Modcha says, no, he doesn't have to. The Modcha clearly understands, Lich Ora, that the concept of a rental agreement on an apartment is not that you buy the apartment for the period of time that you've agreed, but rather it's an ongoing commitment between the two parties. The landlord provides the apartment every day, and the tenant pays for it every day. It's an ongoing commitment from both parties, but the minute one of them can't carry it out, for example, the tenant dies, he no longer has to pay, and therefore the landlord obviously no longer has to provide the apartment. And that's why the contract stops as soon as the shochet is in a situation of onus. So the Shulchan Aruch actually brings down both opinions. It brings the opinion of the Rashba who says that you do have to pay if the tenant dies in the middle. It brings the opinion of the Mordechai who says you don't have to pay. And the Ramah concludes that therefore it would depend on what the situation is. If you, since it's a machlokas haposkim, it's a difference of opinion between the authorities. So the halacha would be hamotzi mechavera olav haraya. You'd have to prove that you were right in order to win the case. So, says the halacha, if the tenant had already paid in advance for the whole year and then he died halfway through the year, the landlord would not have to return the money because he can say, I think the halacha is like the Rashba, says I don't have to give back the money. Whereas if the tenant hasn't paid, he's only paid, for example, up to the point where he died, then the heirs would not have to pay for the rest of the year because they can say, we think that the halacha is like the Mordechai says you don't have to pay. The Shach is a little bit surprised to say to see the Rashba's opinion here. The Shach wants to explain that the Rashba didn't even mean to say Schiras Liyoma Memkahu in this context at all. And therefore the Shach is far more noted to say not like that and to say that the halacha anyway is like the Mordechai, that the tenant doesn't have to pay. But ultimately, he agrees that we would say Hamotzi Mechaver Al Pariah. There are a number of Achronim who say the other way around, actually surprised that the Ramah brings the opinion of the Mordechai, the Shem, the Maharal.
Call Halashon.
At all, because it's a Daf Yochid, it's a unique opinion. All the poskim seem to hold not like that. There's a Marash Alev in Zimun Lamad Hei, there's a Temach Tzedek in Zimun Mem Hei, there's a Menchas Pitim from a Meir Arik who says is very surprised that the Ramah even brings down the opinion of the Maharal. There's a Machan Ephraim and others, but ultimately, the halacha is that we go like the Ramah. And the stimus lost in the shach, that if you've already paid, you can't ask for your money back. But if you haven't yet paid, and the shochet is in a situation of onus that he cannot use the apartment through no fault of his own, because he's prevented from going into the apartment, he doesn't have to give back, he doesn't have to pay anything at all for the period that he's not there. Now, in parentheses, there is a sugya of Makas Medina. This is a very complicated sugya. There is a unique halacha from the Maharam of Rothenburg, quoted again by the Mordechai and by the Dayakim Moshe, who says that although in a situation where someone can't use the apartment, or he's actually talking about an employment contract, this applies to other cases as well. In the case of an employment contract, Maram's case was someone who hired a malamed, he hired a private tutor to teach his son. And then, unfortunately, there was a gezeira, there was an edict issued by the local ruler, by the local king, who says that you're not allowed to teach Torah to boys. So the Malamed is now prevented from carrying out the contract. So normally one would understand, according to the rules that we've said, that if the Malamed can't carry out the contracts, through no fault of his own, nonetheless, the Balabais, the father, doesn't have to pay for him. You're not doing the job. It's not your fault you're not doing the job, but it's certainly not my fault. You're not doing it, so you don't get paid. However, the Marami Rothenberg says that if it's a Makas Medina, if it's not an individual circumstance that this Muhammad finds himself in that he's not able to teach, but rather everybody in the country or in the area is not able to teach because there was, for example, a gevira from the Moshel, from the king, not to teach, then in that case, you actually do have to pay him his full wages. Again, it wouldn't be full wages because he's not working. You'd have to pay him like a foil bottle. And this is a strange halacha lechayer, because if he's not doing the work, why should I have to pay just because it's a Makas Medina, which affects other people as well? So there's a lot of discussion about this in the Achrayim. The Ramah does bring down this halacha elsewhere. There may potentially steer in the Ramah. The Ramah elsewhere seems to say not like that. Then there is the opinion of the Sma, who says, who's the primary commentator on the Chosh Mishpat on the Shulchan Aruch, who says that he understands that the Maharam Rothenburg didn't actually mean that. And he meant in the situation of Makas Medina, you have to pay half. And then there's the opinion of the Nesivus and the opinion of the Gaon, who say that no, they disagree with this whole concept, and they're saying that even if it's a case of Makas Medina, you actually don't have to pay anything at all. If he's not doing the job, you don't have to pay him. So that is a whole shine about what to do in such circumstances. And there are those who want to apply that whole sugya to our circumstance. But this is not correct. All of that discussion in Makkas Medina is talking about where the malamed, the employee, is held back from being able to supply his services. And then there is a tough to say, if it's a Makkas Medina, I nonetheless have to pay him. But in our situation, that's not relevant. In our situation, the employee is replaced by the landlord. The landlord is able to provide his services. He's got an apartment and he has it ready for you. There's nothing wrong with the apartment in our situation. In the case of the Ramad, he's not able to teach. In our case, the maskir, the landlord, is able to get the apartment, is ready. It's just that the soicher is not able to come and use it. In that case, there's no discussion of Makkas Medina at all. The whole sugya of Makkas Medina is relevant to where the supplier of the goods or services is being held back from doing it through no fault of his own. But since it's a general Makkas Medina, it could be that the client actually does have to pay. But in our situation, it's the supplier of the goods and services, the landlord, who is able to provide it. The deer is there. Many people are living in deers in Eretz Yisrael. There's no problem living in the deer. There's nothing wrong with the apartment. It's that the soicher, the client, is not able to use it through no fault of his own. In that situation, the halachas of Makkas Medina don't apply at all. And therefore, again, if the soicher is not able to use the apartment, l'chora, he should be potter and not have to pay for it. Just like we find in Siman Shin Lamed Daled that a soicher who dies and is not able to use the apartment, ultimately the halacha will be, because of the machlokes of poskim, I'm mentioning a chavei al baraya, and if the soicher hasn't paid in advance, he doesn't have to pay. However, it could well be argued that our situation is a little bit different to the case of the soicher who died. In the case of the tenant who died, he is literally onus. It's not his fault at all. There's nothing he can do about it. You can't stop the malach hamotzes. And therefore, an onus happened to him. He cannot carry out the contract. But in our situation, we have a young couple living in Eretz Yisrael, and they're living in the apartment. They've got a contract for a whole year, for example. They're halfway through the contract. Comes Pesach. Now, they decide to move to Chutz La'aretz to be with their families for Pesach. And now they find themselves in a situation where they can't go back to Eretz Yisrael. And they're claiming we're prevented, through no fault of our own, from using the apartment. Well, it could be argued that it's not exactly an onus. True, now you can't get back, but you put yourself in such a situation. You went back to Chutz La'aretz for Pesach. Had you stayed behind, and some people did stay behind, you would be able to use the apartment from Rosh Chodesh Iyar. There's nothing wrong with the apartment. So you can't claim you're an onus. You're being prevented from using the apartment. You put yourself in a situation of onus by going to Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, you're not an onus. That can't be considered as you being prevented from using the apartment. And therefore, you would have to pay. It's not the same as the person who died in the middle of the contract, where he cannot carry out the contract through no fault of his own at all. And therefore, there are some dayanim who pass in a situation like this, again, without any mitigating factors, that you would actually have to pay the full amount for the apartment for the period of time that you're not there, because you're not considered an onus, because it was through your own decisions that you chose to move to Chutz La'aretz. However, there are other dayanim who say, no, you are considered an onus even in such a situation. And they bring a proof from the Shulchan Aruch that we learned earlier. You'll remember that we said that an employee who's doing a job, and it's a davar avod, it's something that if he pulls out in the middle, the employer is going to suffer financial loss. The employee is not allowed to pull out, and if he does, he has to pay compensation. However, if the employee is an onus, he's not able to carry out the job, for example, says a Shulchan Aruch, he gets ill, then he doesn't have to pay if he pulls out in the middle. He's not able to do it. It's not his fault. He fell ill. Adds in the Shulchan Aruch, and it's based on a Truma tradition, the Ramah adds in, Uadin, so too if the employee's son or his wife got ill as well. Under such circumstances, again, he's onus. It's not his fault that he can't come to work and he wouldn't have to pay compensation. Now, the Truma tradition bases this on the Mishnah in the Dorim. The Mishnah in the Dorim says someone who makes a neder, who makes a vow, has to carry out his vow. However, if an onus happens, something unpredictable happens, then he can say, on the understanding that this would have happened, I would have never made the neder. That's called nidre oinsin. He's prevented from carrying out his own instructions related to his vow. Then the vow doesn't apply. Our Mishnah gives an example. Someone made a neder on his friend, and he said, if you don't come to eat by me, then I'm going to forbid all my food on you. And you can do that with a neder. Then it turns out the friend doesn't come, so really the food should be forbidden on his friend. But it turns out the reason why the friend didn't come is because he was ill, says the Mishnah, or his son was ill. Says the Mishnah, that's nidre oinsin. The neder is not valid because the reason why he's not coming is because it's not his fault. He's not able to come. He's prevented from coming. On that circumstance, I didn't make the neder in the first place. Says the Trumas Hadeshah. So you see, not only the person himself is ill, but so too, if his son is ill, that's also called an onus. So the Trumas Hadeshah, and therefore, if an employee is ill, or his son is ill, or his wife is ill, then he's called an onus, and he doesn't have any liability for not coming to work. Now, one could have argued that neder is a little bit different to a circumstances of a commercial contract between two parties. Neder is a unilateral declaration. A person makes a neder. He's entitled to say, listen, I didn't mean the neder if I'm an onus, or he's an onus, we're prevented from doing it. And maybe even if he's not a proper onus, he's only a little bit of an onus because he's perfectly well, but his son is not well. Even on that circumstance, I didn't intend to make the neder. But when you have a bilateral contract between two parties, can one party really come along and say, well, I didn't mean to commit myself to the contract in the case of onus, and even if it's a minor onus, I didn't mean to commit to yourself. Well, you might not have meant to commit yourself. What about the other party? Who says that he's agreeing on such terms as well? But at any rate, that's what the Trumas Hadeshah says, and the Ramah brings it down, la'aloch in Shulchan Aruch. Now, arguably, a person who has a son who's ill is not prevented from coming to work. He can come to work. His son is not well, so he has to look after him. We can find somebody else to look after him. There should be ways of finding someone else to look after the son who's not well, or his wife if he's not well. Perhaps she can look after herself. No, it's clear from the Trumas suggestion that the idea is that whatever a person normally does in such a situation, that is called he can't come to work. He could technically come to work. He chooses not to, but the reason he chooses not to is because he's acting like most normal people who do in such a situation would stay home to look after his son or his wife who's not well. So if that's the case, we can say the same thing in our case. True, the young couple could have stayed for Pesach. They chose to go to Chutz La'aretz. But on the other hand, they are chutzniks. Everybody knows that most chutzniks, or many chutzniks certainly, go back to Chutz La'aretz for Pesach and come back afterwards. And not only that, but the Baal Dira, the landlord, knows that as well. So it could be argued that if the young couple decide to go to Chutz La'aretz, and they now find themselves in a situation of onus, they can't come back and use the apartment, then they are considered an onus, even though they put themselves in that situation, because they didn't deliberately do it. They acted in a normal and acceptable way for people in their situation. And therefore, if ultimately they find themselves in a situation of onus, that is enough to make them considered an onus. And therefore, they wouldn't have to pay. So there are the only ones actually say, you're potter. Conversely, the ones who say that you're still chayev learn the Trumas Hadeshah a little bit different. They say the reason why a person whose son is ill is considered an onus that he can't come to work, it's not because he's doing the normal thing. It's because if someone's child is ill, he has to look after his child. It's his duty to look after his child. The Trumas Hadeshah says that if his wife is not well, then even more so he has to look after his wife, Ishtik Agufo. So he has to look after his family if they're not well. So that's an onus. True, it's not an onus gomel, because technically he might be able to find a way out by finding someone else to look after them. But nonetheless, it's his duty to do it, to look after himself. If that's the case, then he's considered an onus, albeit not a huge onus, a minor onus, an onus kal, but an onus nonetheless. It's not his choice that he's in this situation. He finds himself in a situation in which he must act, or he's supposed to act in a way in which he looks after his family, so he's prevented from coming to work. That is an onus. That, the Trumas Hadeshah says, is an onus, and we learn that from the Gemara in the Dorim. But to extrapolate to our case, well, the young couple don't have to go to Chutz La'aretz. There's no duty on them to go to Chutz La'aretz. They normally do so. The fact that they normally do so might not be sufficient to allow them to claim that they've now an onus because they're stuck in Chutz La'aretz. They can't come back to Eretz Yisrael. So there are two opinions generally amongst the Dayanim, and again, it will depend on the circumstance, as to a couple who came back during the coronavirus crisis before Pesach, and then decided, and that now that they're stuck in England or in America, can't go back to Eretz Yisrael to use their dira, some are paskening that they're chayav to pay because they're not really an onus because they went to Chutz Laaretz of their own choice and now find themselves in a situation that they can't come back. Whereas others are saying, no, they are potter because they acted in a normal way that people do in their situation, and therefore they now find themselves in an onus. That's called an onus as well. I would add a couple of important points. Firstly, it seems clear that someone who was actually living in Chutz Laaretz and signed a contract to take the dira after Pesach and now find that they can't get to Eretz Yisrael, all poskim would agree, all dayanim would agree in such a circumstance that they're potter. Because they were living in, they didn't choose to go to Chutz Laaretz, they were living in Chutz Laaretz, and they were prevented from coming after Pesach. And no one's going to say that it was there, they still had the possibility that they could have come before Pesach to make sure that they're in Eretz Yisrael in order to carry out the terms of the contract after Pesach. That's surely not necessary at all. They're definitely a case of an onus. Another important point to note is that if the young couple have left their stuff, all their goods and their things that they own, possibly their furniture, in the apartment, then they certainly can't claim that they are owners and they can't come to use the apartment. They still are using the apartment. If they want to come along and claim we're an owners and we're potter from paying for the apartment for Chodesh Iyar, then they'll have to take all of their stuff out of the apartment because they can't use the apartment on the one hand and then claim that they're an owners and they're not able to use the apartment. Another important factor is to say that if they do want to say that they don't have to pay, they would have to let the Baldira know. They would have to inform him that they're not going to be there for the next month and therefore they're not paying and they're cancelling the contract. But they can't not say anything and then afterwards say we don't want to pay because we couldn't have come. As far as the Baldir is concerned, if you don't cancel the contract, you're probably keeping it because you want to be there for Sivan or Tammuz or afterwards. And therefore, if they do want to claim that they're potter, at the very least, they'll have to probably take all of the stuff out and let the Baldir know in advance that they're not going to be there. Halacha l'maisa, again, every situation will turn on its own circumstances. I've certainly advised people that they should speak to the Baldira and try and negotiate some sort of compromise. It's in everybody's interest. The Baldira is interested that the apartment shouldn't stay long for too long, stay open for too long, and if the young couple are forced to pay, they might pull out after 1 month. It's in the interest of the young couple that they can leave their stuff in the apartment and come back, and it's Hashem Bekorov when this whole thing is over, and therefore they should attempt to negotiate with the Baldira a reduced rate, perhaps, for the month of Iyar, and then revisit the situation as we approach the month of Sivan, when hopefully, Mitzvah Hashem, all this will be over. But if the Baldira insists that they have to pay, and they insist they don't have to pay, then both parties will have to agree to go to a specific dayan. Both parties will present their circumstances, and the dayan will hear both parties, examine the circumstances carefully, and will rule accordingly whether they're chayav or whether they're potter.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.